You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. And we are live. What's up, chat? Welcome to another episode of Chill with Chill. The super sub is in the building in replacement of Ox. Salute to Ox. Chill, we back. How you feeling, brother?
Hey, man, we are back in effect right now, yo. Yes, we are here. Yes, we are. Yes, we are back, man. It's 2024. I know I ain't seen you do since last year, but hey, man, this is what it is, yo. Right? This is what it is. So I'm definitely down to do it again. Hell yes.
Yes, sir. Definitely. I'm glad to be here with my favorite uncle. Now, Unc, let's get right into it, man. Pascal Siakam is the breaking news that's going on right now. What is your thoughts on the trade, and was it good for both parties?
Initially, I didn't think it moved the needle. And the reason why, because when I first heard the trade, right? This is what happened when I first heard the trade. When I first heard the trade, I thought that it was Pascal Siakam for Buddy Hield and Bruce Brown. And when I heard that originally, Buddy Hield, Bruce Brown, and a couple of picks, I didn't love it. And the reason why, right? And the reason why I didn't love it is because the first thing I'm thinking is, well, first of all, Pascal Siakam is on an expired. Did I lose him?
Sorry about that.
I'm straight. Pascal Siakam is on an expiring deal. With Pascal Siakam being on an expiring deal, this doesn't really help. This is a huge risk for Indiana, because with Pascal Siakam on the roster, I don't think this pushes them over the top in terms of being a championship team. Like, he doesn't get them to the East Finals. He doesn't get them to the NBA Finals. So when I first heard the original deal with Buddy Hield and Bruce Brown and a couple of ones, I'm thinking, well, if you get Pascal Siakam in the fold, but getting Pascal Siakam in the fold, his contract is up at the end of the season. He's already made it clear that he's testing free agency after the season, which makes him now a rental. So now, giving up Bruce Brown, your best rotation player, giving up Buddy Hield at the time, this was before Noir was actually in the deal. It wasn't Buddy Hield. But when I originally heard the deal, I'm thinking that you're giving up your best long ball shooter, and you're giving up your best rotation player, and you're giving up a bunch of ones. The ones don't really bother me more than I'm losing these two players, plus I'm going to lose Pascal Siakam at the end of the year. So I'm losing three guys. I don't like this deal at all, only to find out when I started doing some homework, number one, Pascal Siakam, when he gets traded to Indiana, well, they own his bird rights, just like Toronto did. So with them owning his bird rights, they could pay him whatever. It could go over the cap. So now it's just a matter of, does he want to be in Indiana? Because he really dug being in Toronto. He didn't want to leave Toronto. He wants to stay up there. He really didn't want to leave Toronto. So now the question is does he want to be in Indiana? With him on this unit, that gives them another wing scorer. Because I never liked Pascal Siakam at the four. Never. I always liked Pascal Siakam as a wing. I always thought he was a three-man. He had a really good mid-range game. He could shoot the long ball. But he could also play on the box, too.
Right.
He could also exploit smaller players. Problem with Pascal Siakam is Indiana's one of the worst defensive, if not the worst defensive team in the league. He doesn't really help that.
Yeah.
He doesn't really help that much. Which is why I feel like with him on the crew, this doesn't push them. Right. This doesn't make the Toronto Raptors. I'm sorry. This doesn't make Indiana. This doesn't put them at the top of the at the top of the Eastern Conference, where if Milwaukee were to get Alex Caruso, that's the difference right there. Right. That's the guy that they were missing as opposed to Indiana. They still missing dirty work guys. They still missing a legit two guard. Right. Mm-hmm. They still missing some rotation pieces. They still missing defenders on the wing. That's stuff that they still missing. That's going to make them a legit championship contender. Pascal Siakam makes them competitive. Mm-hmm. He make them a little bit more competitive. I think they in the sixth spot right now. So with them being in the sixth spot right now, with Pascal Siakam. I mean, what is – so it's going to be them, Cleveland. I had Cleveland before the season started. I had Cleveland as a top three seed. And with that being said, J-Rob, with them being the number six seed, I mean, what's the highest anybody thinks Indiana could be? Maybe a five seed?
Maybe a five, maybe a four, depending on how things finish. I mean, maybe essentially maybe they're buying into their style. You know, the way they beat basketball teams in this league is by outscoring them. We're going to score more than you. If you're going to beat us, if you're going to score 145, we'll score 155. So I think they're buying into that with this move. But also, I think Indiana is trying to say, listen, Pascal, look what we could build with you and Halliburton right now.
Right.
You know, do you have a – look at it as like it's like a audition for the organization. You know, you show like, listen, Pascal, you have a championship pedigree. You know what it takes. You've been in playoff games. Yeah. You know what it is like to be a great player, and you could be a good veteran leader to match up with Pascal. You know, and you were right, Chill. It was reported he was bewildered and heartbroken that the Raptors were even considering trading him. So this is a new journey for him to buy into a fan base where Indiana is not a big place for free agents. So you could be a legitimate hero in this city along with Tyrese. And so I'm looking at Pascal. It's like, I like the move for the team, honestly, as adding a piece, because now you have another consistent scorer too. Like, you got another go-to level scorer in Pascal, which I think is good to have with a guy like Tyrese Halliburton. Right. And so I think if you look at it, let's say they get to the second round. Let's say they go seven games in the second round. I think if you're Pascal, you could look at this situation like, we're maybe one piece away. And, you know, Indiana is already being one of the front runners to try to pursue Paul George. So then, you know, maybe Paul comes in, you get that three together over there in Indiana. I think that's viable in the East. You know what I'm saying?
Two things. Number one, they're going to have to pay Pascal. They already maxed out Tyrese Halliburton at 250. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. They already maxed him out. And Pascal Siakam is looking for the same kind of money. He's 29 years old. So I think at this level, the level that he's playing, I mean, he was an all-pro 2 years ago. I think he's like 22, 23 a game this year. Mm-hmm. So he still plays at an all-star caliber, all-pro level. He's still playing at that level. Right. But that being said, having to pay him is really gonna hamper you guys. Now, they're in a similar situation, Indiana is. They're in a similar situation with Oklahoma City, because I believe Mathurin, Naismith, Obi Toppin, they still only rook deals. So we still got some time with those guys, right? We still got some time with those guys too. We don't have to pay them yet. But if you're committing that much money to both Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Halliburton, you're going to make it really difficult to bring in any other free agents, because that's almost That's almost $500 million, because that's the kind of money Pascal Siakam is looking for. And that's when it gets tricky when you're talking about salary cap. Don't get me wrong. When you own a team's bird, when a team owns your bird rights, we can go over the salary cap. We can do that, right? Mm-hmm. So they're in the same situation that Boston is in with both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Yeah. But when you're paying that kind of money, it can get tricky when you're talking about bringing in other free agents.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I think I also would say, I think Indiana is in an interesting place right now, because, Chill, what do we know about like top talent in the league? We've seen multiple players start in small town franchises and then go branch out to go to a bigger market, because obviously just the inability to win where they're at. And so I look at Indiana and I think they're in a peculiar situation, because they found a key piece in Tyrese Halliburton. They are going to be able to build around him for the next decade plus. And so with having him on your team, you got to maximize this window you have. Obviously, you upped him. So I could see them maxing out and giving Pascal maybe more than what most other teams would give him. Obviously, I think they would have to look to bring in one more premier free agent. I don't think it will end up being a Paul George-esque player, but it does need to be, I think, somebody who does make this team a bit better defensively. You need another two-way guy who can do both, but just at a consistent level. It doesn't have to be a 25-point-a-game scorer, but you need at least 15 to 17 a night consistently from another player, I think, in your starting unit.
Which is fair, 100%.
Who can defend?
Yes, definitely. We have to shore that up. We absolutely, of all the things we have to shore that up more than anything. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to score, J-Rob, you're a football guy. At mm-hmm. some point, I mean, at some point, we can't just have a team scoring every possession. That can't happen. We yeah. eventually got to stop you, right? Yeah. It's not going to be 56 to 48.
Yeah.
It's not, especially not in the playoffs, because mm-hmm. you're going to run up on teams that can score like you, only except they also can defend too. Mm-hmm. You're going to have cornerbacks that can slow down your better wide receivers. You're going to have a pass rush that's going to get to your quarterback. Yeah. So that running it up to 40 and 50 like you were doing during the regular season, you're not going to do that in the playoffs. That's not going to happen. So if you mm-hmm. think that you're going to score 150 or you're going to score 140 against Boston or you're going to score that against Philly, well, that's not happening because Philly is going to slow you down and they can score. How are you going to slow those guys down? That's definitely going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Listen, like I just off season, you have to go all in on bolstering your defense. But it just seems like at the pace that team wants to play, because they want to get up yep. and down, they need guys who are conditioned and you need guys who are going to be willing to defend while also playing at that pace. Right. You know what I'm saying? Because they're gonna be looking to run. And that's just their vibe. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how that is going forward. Go ahead.
Now remember too, J-Rob, that division that they play in is very difficult with them, mm-hmm. Milwaukee and Cleveland, right? Yeah. So I can understand the logic that, all right, with what we currently have with both Cleveland and Milwaukee ahead of us, we can't just stand pat. We got to do something. Now, I do understand that part. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to swing for the fences and make the wrong – I don't want to swing for the fences and swing at the wrong pitch. Mm-hmm. I do like Pascal Siakam on this unit because, again, the distributor that Tyrese Halliburton is, the playmaker that he is, how fast they play, and the one-on-one player that Pascal Siakam is. Because Pascal Siakam is a one-on-one player. I really think he's going to help Tyrese Halliburton. And Tyrese Halliburton is going to put him in a space where, yo, I can get buckets. Mm-hmm. I can get more buckets. But we got to be able to slow teams down. And, yeah. and we're not doing that. We're not.
And I think one thing, too, to also mention about the move for Pascal is, like, I think the way that he's being moved out of Toronto, he may have felt like he's, like, I helped you guys win the championship. Like, you just don't love me anymore. Like, it's just, yeah. it's over. You don't love me anymore. And I think Indiana could be a place for him where his veteran leadership on a very young basketball team will be extremely valued and he could build something. So I'm excited to see the future when it comes to this team, because I think it could be good. Like, I'm a big fan of Tyrese Halliburton. I think he has a lot of ability. I think he is really smart.
Yeah, and upside too. Let me ask you this though, J-Rob. Is there a world where Pascal Siakam walks out the front door in Indiana and goes back to Toronto?
I mean, you could do that, but you kicked me out the door. You know, like,
now, I think they did it to get better. But if I do it to get better and then I bring you back, it's like breaking up with your chick. I ain't breaking up with you because I want another chick. I'm breaking up with you to improve myself. Mm-hmm. And then when I get it together, now I'm trying to get back with you. Now, if you could get out of your feelings and see that, which is clearly what Toronto doing. They brought RJ Barrett up there. Scottie Barnes. Now you bring back Pascal Siakam. I still think that they need another lead guard. I still think I'd like to replace Dennis Schroeder with a better lead guard, right? And it's crazy that we mentioned lead guard too. Really quick, really quickly, J-Rob. We was talking about New Year's resolutions this morning. And mm-hmm. one of my resolutions is I got to accept what the lead guard is today. Mm-hmm. I got to, as much as I love Magic, as much as I love Stockton, as much as I love Isaiah, Dennis Johnson,
mm-hmm.
Mark Price, Kevin Johnson, Jason Kidd, Gary Payton, mm-hmm. as much as I love these guys, J-Rob, they gone. And I got to accept that ain't what the lead guard is no more. Mm-mm. That's not what the lead guard is. The lead guard, and somebody brought this up to me. I think it was Dama who brought this point up to me. He said to me, Chill, if I told you 20 years ago, if I told you in 2003 that Gilbert Arenas and Allen Iverson, that's the future of the league guard. Yeah. That's what the league guard going to look mm-hmm. like in 20 years. Would you have bought that? I was like, hell no. There's no way you could have sold me that. This is what the league guard, mm-hmm. but Steve Francis, Baron Davis. That's what the league. That's what the league art is going to look like 20 years from now. No, you wouldn't have been able to sell me that. Yeah. But with that being said, I got to accept that that's what the league art is today. So with that being said, if Toronto can get another league guard, a better league guard, not necessarily a primary distributor, because that's what the league guard is today. I do understand that. He's a bucket getter. Then he's a distributor. He's not a distributor and a bucket getter at the same time. He's more of a bucket getter who can pass. So I got to accept that that's who that is. And if Toronto could get themselves, get their hands on a lower level, just a lower level league guard. And when I, when I say lower level, I mean, we already know who Dame Lillard is. We know who the better league guards in the game are. Curry, Luka. We know who those guys are, right? Yeah. So if I could get something maybe a tier below those guys, right? I know I'm not going to be able to get guys like Jamal Murray and De'Aaron Fox. No, I'm not going to be able to get that, right? Can I get something like Jalen Brunson? I'm not going to be able to take Jalen Brunson away from the Knicks. But can I get something like that? Is it possible for me to get, for me to pry away Darius Garland from Cleveland? Is it possible that I can do that?
I was just going to say, how about how many first-round picks would it take to get Darius Garland or LaMelo Ball out of – get him out of Charlotte? You know, obviously he's on a max contract. He's on a max deal. Right. But I'm just saying, I mean, Darius Garland's a good idea. I mean, if you could get one of these guys, how many first picks would it cost? How many first picks would you be willing to get up, give up for those type of players?
Could I get Colin Sexton up in Toronto? That's who – I'm thinking about somebody like that.
Colin Sexton.
And the reason why is because, again, this is the age that I live in. This is the age that I live in, right, J-Rob? Because I don't live in – John Stockton ain't around no more. He's not, unfortunately.
Right.
John Stockton ain't around no more. Isaiah Thomas isn't around no more. Jason Kidd, these dudes ain't around no more. And not only are they not around no more, I don't think in my lifetime that they coming back.
Right.
I don't. I don't think in my lifetime that they coming back. So because of that, I'm thinking to myself, all right, so what am I left with? I'm left with the scoring guard. I'm not gonna be able to get Luka. I'm not gonna be able to get Curry, right? I'm not gonna be able to get De'Aaron Fox. I'm not gonna be able to get Trae Young. I'm not gonna be able to get them guys, right? And I'm not gonna be able to get Brunson. I'm not gonna be able to get Murray. I'm not gonna be able to get those guys. So who's left? Who can I pry away from? Can I sell Toronto on letting me have Darius Garland, somebody like that?
That would be a good pick. I would actually really like to see Darius Garland. He would be great on this team. I mean, I personally feel like if we're looking at league guards, in some ways, you know, if I'm the Toronto Raptors, I'm kind of circling Isaiah Collier coming out of USC, maybe being my point guard of the future, because they're gonna have a pretty high pick in the draft. You know, I mean, they're one of the lower end teams. They're gonna have a pretty good pick in the draft. And you know, I look at Toronto as a team that really would benefit just keep building through that draft like they have for years. Because I'm gonna be honest, I might be higher on Scottie Barnes than most people, but just watching Scottie Barnes develop as a perimeter shooter this season shows that he has the work ethic to get better. And that's good to see out of a player as young as he is. And I think he still has a really high ceiling to go, because I think he's a great defender. I think he's versatility. I think he has some of that playmaking that you kind of like. You know, I look at him as like a Scottie Pippen-esque player with a better three-point jump shot, a better mid-range jump shot, can still do all the things in transition, can still rebound, can still block shots, can still defend on the perimeter. With that ability alone, I think if you get a guy like Isaiah Collier who will be able to get them in set, be able to utilize him, be able to run in transition, score the ball, shoot the basketball, I think he would be a great pick to add. You know what I'm saying? Like I really say the Raptors to me whiffed really bad this draft. And I bring it up all the time just on my own channel, just in passing, because I think the Raptors, they needed a jump shooter pretty bad. That's one of their things that they needed, because I don't think they were a very good three-point shooting team, even though they took a lot of threes the season prior. They went and got Grady Dick, who right now is just, you know, he's just developing down in the G League. But if they would have got drafted a guy like Jordan Hawkins, he would have immediately been an impact player on that team, because he would have provided the shooting that they need. And he sometimes has to go down to the G League just because too many vets are back making all the money. But anytime he gets the opportunity to play,
he's great.
100%.
Love him. 100%. Love him as a shooter. Sure, absolutely. And I didn't even think about what you just said, J-Rob, in terms of where college, like, wait a minute. We don't just get players from the NBA.
Yeah.
I completely forgot. Well, wait a minute. Where do you get your players from? You get your players from college. Is there a lead guard in college that I'm not paying attention to? That is there a 17 and 8 guy that I don't know about? Is there a 15 and 9 guy that I don't know about that I need to pay attention to? Now I know that in Toronto, it wouldn't be that big of a deal because RJ Barrett, young.
Yeah.
Scottie Barnes, young. So we're still building this thing, right? We still need a 5-man in Toronto too, right? I still think we need a 5-man. And I think that that 5-man is the big fella in Purdue. I think he'll drop right in your lap. I don't think he's a first five. I don't think he's a first 10. I think that a lot of teams are going to pass on him. So with that being said, Zach Edey could very well drop to, 17 or 18, and that's your guy. Because what we can do, I mean, you see Chet, you see Wimby. So we got this big guy, and we got this big guy that's 7'2" or 7'3".
He like 7'5", it seemed like.
Huge. And with him being that big, J-Rob, we could teach you how to be a stretch five.
Are you a fan of Zach Edey?
I'm a fan of big guys. That's what I am. And a big guy like that, when I think about a big guy like that, I think about what Yao was at 7'6", distributor, could knock down the long ball, could shoot in the mid-range. Yao was not a great athlete. Yao was not getting up and down the floor with the best of them. In fact, if we're being honest, Yao was a mud foot. Yao was a straight mud foot, if we're being honest. Yao wasn't getting up and down the floor and running like a deer like Ralph Sampson or Tim Duncan or anything like that. No, he was not that. So if this guy, if that's your concern with Edey, the skill set on the next level, we can teach that. Because last I checked, J-Rob, Kawhi Leonard did not show up as a 25-a-game guy. No, he did not. When Leonard showed up, he was a defender and got better as a scorer. There is nobody outside of the San Antonio Spurs locker room or the San Antonio Brass that said, yo, that's our leading scorer for the next 5-6 years right there. Nobody said that. Maybe the coach at San Diego State said, yo, this dude can score a lot better than you think. He's got a lot better upside offensively, but there was nobody that was buying. Kawhi Leonard was a 20-plus a game guy in addition to being an elite defender, because we already knew he was that, right? We already knew he was an elite defender. So a guy like Zach Edey, there's nobody that's buying that, yo, he could be a money mid-range shooter, and he could be a stretch five. We could teach you that.
Yeah.
We could very well teach you that.
Nah, facts. I agree. No, I like Zach Edey for his size. I just think my biggest concerns for him are – getting up and down the basketball court throughout a game. And obviously just being able to move his feet against quicker competition in the NBA. I think those are, and obviously I think I'll see how the skill development goes, but if he can stretch the floor at his height, I mean, sky is the limit if that's the possibility. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I'm there with the Zach Edey. I see the vision. But he will be a guy where I have to see it in some ways to believe it, because, I'm be honest, Jaime Jaquez to me should definitely cancel some of the ideas that in today's game, staying in college is a bad thing, because it's not. It's not a bad thing.
Keep going, J-Rob.
No, it allows you to develop. And I will say, when you come into the game at an older age, you're a little bit more mature as a basketball player just from the amount of basketball experience you have. And so I think sometimes you can find yourself in a good plug-and-play situation. I think Zach Edey also knows his adjustment to the NBA will be all right, because he's played a lot of basketball. I mean, he's going to be, what, a senior? He's a junior or senior, right? So, I mean, I think he could be okay. And I think him playing in his own backyard, I think that'll also – you know, motivate him to get better. I like where the Raptors could potentially be headed.
And remember too, J-Rob, that we're talking about a guy who's not getting on Phoenix, right? He ain't getting on the Knicks where, yo, this got to happen right now.
Right.
He's getting with a bunch of other kids.
Yeah.
Right. So with him getting with a bunch of other kids, the development could be that. Okay. Zach Edey could very well be a project, but this project could turn into something really good where in the next 2-3 years, when you see his development and you see him being able to stretch the floor, you see him being able to rim run. And when I say rim run, okay, he ain't Wimby, right? He's not Chet. Okay. I'm not going to go that far and say that he's those guys. However, what I will say is when you are that skilled, because he is a skilled big guy. Let's be clear about that. He is a skilled big guy. The athleticism might be a little bit tricky, but he is a skilled big guy.
Yeah.
And if we can cultivate that into our system, like you just said, the sky's the limit. I know that it's a little foggy, but I just need you to wipe your lens off a little bit, because I'm telling you, there's something there, man. It is.
No, I'm an optimist. At the end of the day, I'm very much an optimist. I want to see those players that you may not. I like a guy that comes out of the dark. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, you work your head down and, you know, you see it. You never saw it coming. So, you know, I'm definitely hoping for the best for Zach Edey. So, veteran teams versus young teams.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on some of the younger teams in the NBA? Because I feel like right now with the young teams in the NBA, it's like some are pretty damn good for as young as they are. And then some are obviously going through the growing pains of being a young team, because then you have your Oklahoma Cities, and then obviously you have your Detroit Pistons. It's like this, but then you also have your veteran teams, where the youngest player in the NBA is killing the team for the veterans. That, you know, a team like the Warriors, who are a veteran-esque team, not looking too good right now. So, I mean, where do you see what is your thoughts and takes on both sides, and do you think the younger, is it better to have a younger team and maybe in this new generation of NBA because of the windows you have with this new age of players?
I think that when you're talking about younger teams, what helps more than anything is rook deals and guys not getting injured. That helps more than that rook deals and guys getting hurt. Not guys not getting injured. Guys actually getting hurt. Well, damn, OG, why you want guys to get hurt? Well, what that does is, one, it buys me time.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I can get them cheaper. Because this guy that gets hurt, well, that gives me a little bit of leverage that maybe he might be made of glass. But he might not be. Like Steph Curry would be a prime example of that. Steph Curry is a prime example of a guy who, when he was coming up, the logic on him was,
he
wasn't really that durable. Well, we end up getting him on the cheap early. Well, when you get him on the cheap early, that buys you time. A guy like Draymond, who hadn't developed fast enough where you were able to pay him a little bit less. When you have stuff like that, that really helps your unit. So a team like Oklahoma City, where they got four guys, Jay Williams, Chet, J-Dub, Chet, what's this kid's name from Kentucky? Cason Wallace, right? And Josh Giddey. So you got four dudes on rook deals. So that buys us a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem is when you get that good this early, people immediately start to think, yo, we're a championship contender. Easy. Because when you run up on a team like the Clippers, who, I've said this already, J-Rob, they have Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard, and Paul George. That's a team full of vets. And it looked like that last night. That's what it looked like when I watched them play against Oklahoma, when I watched them play against the Clippers last night. I saw a bunch of vets, and I basically saw a bunch of vets handle a bunch of young guys. Now, don't get me wrong. Well, it was a back-to-back, OG. When you got a young team and you got young guys,
you're fine.
Back-to-backs ain't that big of a deal. No, yeah, a guy like Jay is 25. Chet is 20 years old. J-Dub, Josh Giddey is 21 years old. That's not a big deal at all.
Yeah, but
when you're dealing with vets like the Clippers, there's nuances. There's ways that they play. There's tricks to the game. They know how to speed the game up, how to slow the game down. They know not to get into a track meet with you guys. They know when to run. They know not to get physical with you. They know how to exploit mismatches. Paul George, for a prime example, where he gets in mismatches with Josh Giddey, or he's able to drag Chet Holmgren away from the basket and get him in one-on-ones. That's stuff that vets know. When you're dealing with kids, they don't know that. What they do know, though, is they know how to play fast. They know how to get up and down the floor. They know how to do all of those things They know how to do all of those things that look good in that look good. But when you're talking about vets who do the other things that you can't, that most people aren't really paying attention to, I think that that's a huge deal. Now, when you got a team like Oklahoma City that's dealing with a bunch of kids, and their best player is 25, when you really don't have vet like a guy like Steven Adams, like a guy like a Steven Adams type of player, or Mike Conley, when you have guys like that that's on the unit, that really bolsters your unit. That really makes your team so much better because you have that vet presence. And you have that guy who can teach us the game. I heard Chauncey Billups and Kevin Garnett say, Chauncey Billups said he didn't really feel like he had a ride until he got to Minnesota. And that was because of Sam Mitchell. He said Sam Mitchell taught him how to be a pro. And I've said this to you in the past, J-Rob, as good as I am coming out of college, I got pro potential. It's your job to teach me the pro game. And not just basketball. Teach me how to be a pro. Right. And a lot of these vets are necessary, and because guys like PJ, Tucker, is necessary. Taj Gibson, necessary.
Can I just? There's two things I want to say because there's two things that I thought were interesting. So first thing, I do agree about the veteran impact, but I would almost argue, don't you think those veterans are Lu Dort and SGA? And I think they learned how to be pros from Chris Paul. Chris Paul talked highly of SGA going to his house every day in Oklahoma City, learned how to be a leader. I think SGA is the undeniable leader of that basketball team. And I think everybody talks about, you know, SGA doesn't smoke, he doesn't drink. You know, he is a gym rat. That has literally been the rep about him to this point. And even with a guy like Chris Paul saying that, who's very credible, maybe he is the de facto leader. And I know a young leader may be, you know, something that raises eyebrows for people, but I mean, the way he has that team humming, I think Lu Dort, remember, this is also the same team that watched James Harden knock them out of their potential in the playoffs, in the bubble, when they had Chris Paul. And I think they've learned from that moment as well. So I look at, I definitely agree with that, but I'll also say to you, Chill, the Clippers, are you, outside of Kawhi Leonard, the other three, as much as they're veterans and talented players, they don't really give me that level of confidence just because they're like, for example, we've seen Paul George in the playoff have meltdowns. We've seen, obviously, James, and, you know, Russ hasn't been, you know, he was good in last year's playoffs trying to help the Clippers where they were at. But he's not really one of these. We don't know him from being a big playoff performer. And so, you know, just as much as that, there's a lot of things that we're trying to figure about Oklahoma City as a basketball team, because we really don't know who this team is truly. Like, we know they're talented, but we need to see who they are when they have to, when the pressure is at its highest in the league. And I just look at the Clippers and the three players you said, I still think there's a lot of question marks that have yet to be answered about all three of those players and how they impact winning. So, you know, the only player I think anybody would be confident is going in with is Kawhi Leonard, obviously. So, but I do understand and I do agree with having a veteran presence on the team. You know what I'm saying? Like, I do agree with that part.
Make no mistake, J-Rob. Make no mistake. That point that you just made about the Clippers, and that there's really nothing that blows you away about them because you've seen a lot of this instead of that, right? That part... I'm going to compound that point by saying I'm not in on the Clippers. I'm not in on the Clippers. I'm out on the Clippers. And the reason why I'm out on the Clippers is because Paul George already told me that he's not a number one on a championship.
I didn't like that. Why would he say that about himself?
Even if we already know it, I mean, like,
but he's so talented, bro. He's actually so talented. He's one talented to me. To me, right. One level talented for sure.
No question about that. But even if it's like the cops, it's kind of the opposite of the cops. I mean, where like I already know, I just need you to confirm it, and that's what Paul George did. Yeah. I already know that you're not a number one. It's probably not a good idea to say that though. It's probably not a good idea to say that. Simply off the strength that if you aren't that, well, I know your mentality. I know that when we get into the meat and potatoes of the game, you're not going to take it over because you don't think you're that dude anyway. So with that being said, Paul George already told us that he ain't the number one on the championship team. James Harden, we've seen him take teams deep into the playoffs. But we've also seen him, when he's taking teams deep into the playoffs, we've seen him fold up. Mm-hmm. Russ has already shown us that I could be the lead guard on a championship contender. Well, we ain't winning it with me being the guy. He's already showed us that. There's only one guy who's actually showed us that I can do it. But the problem is over the last 4 years, he's averaging 40 games a year. That's the problem. So this whole thing, the post that's holding up this tent, is a guy that's been averaging 40 games per season over the last 4 years. He goes to pieces. This thing goes to pieces.
Yeah.
That's why I'm not all the way in on the Clippers. However, J-Rob, I can recognize a vet unit that can handle a bunch of kids from time to time.
I agree. I will ask you this, though. I know there are a bunch of kids, and I know you think they should go get a vet. But the missing piece, I think, to that puzzle over there in Oklahoma City, that I would be honest, if they add this piece to me, I don't minimum game six, game seven of the second round of the semifinals of the Western Conference. And to me, there's one team in the NBA that got a 7 foot four power forward that can shoot threes, that can pick and roll, pick and pop, can rebound the basketball and shoot it at a high level. His name is Lauri Markkanen. And I know Utah is in rebuild mode. And if they want to get as many picks, a team that has a lot of first round picks, a lot of first round things that they can use to build their future, get that big, trade that big four man from Finland over to Oklahoma City. And I'll be honest, if they add Lauri Markkanen, because that's my only issue with that team right now. I just don't think they have enough size. SGA's a tall guard. I know that. Jalen Williams is about 6'6", 6'5". And then obviously Chet is a 7-footer. But, you know, Dort, Giddey, that's 6'8". He's 6'4". So, you know, them two players right there, I love them. But I think with Lauri as another piece, that really ups the rebounding. It's another perimeter shooter. He can go get you 20, 25, 26, and 10. And yes, Dubé Lox, I do. I definitely am a fan of Lauri Markkanen. I just love his game. He reminds me of Chris Bosh a little bit. I'm not going to lie. Like, he gives me Chris Bosh vibes. And I think, to me, that Chris Bosh, that type of build, I think in the modern game, that's my favorite type of four man. And for me, like, that to me is like the modern four. And I think it works so well on pretty much. Like, I think that's a plug and play four, like, right in this game.
So two things, J-Rob. Number one, if Danny Ainge calls me, I am not talking to him. Because I know what's going to happen. I'm going to end up losing my shirt. I'm going to lose the keys to my car, right? I'm going to lose the keys to my house.
Yeah.
He's going to sell me that I'm going to get all of this back times two. No, I am not dealing with Danny Ainge. I am not. Let's get to the bottom of that right now, because I know who Danny Ainge is. Danny Ainge is going to fleece me.
And yeah.
I'm not trying to hear that from Danny Ainge. No way. Yeah. What do you think? And everything that you just said, J-Rob, about Lauri Markkanen, what you think he's gonna call? There's no way that Danny Ainge is giving up.
Oh my goodness!
There's no way that Danny Ainge is giving up Lauri Markkanen to the Oklahoma City Thunder for a bucket of extra crispy and a six pack. Okay.
Nah, it's gonna cost a lot of first rounds. It might cost Case and Wallace.
I want some of them kids. We'll start with the picks. I'm gonna start with those. I was able to get four ones from Minnesota.
Bags.
Right? Right. I was able to get four ones from Minnesota for Rudy Gobert, which actually turned out to be a really good trade on both parts. Y'all dudes was running your mouth about Rudy, and this was a terrible trade when you didn't realize what was it contingent on. It was contingent on Cat being healthy. You see Cat being healthy, you see the kind of force that Rudy is defensively.
Yeah.
Now you see where Minnesota
works out.
They're at the top of the Western Conference. That's number one. Yeah. Number two, this Utah Jazz team, right? This Utah Jazz team, this Oklahoma City team. How many first round picks do they have, J-Rob? I think like 47. I think like 47 or 48.
Gotta be.
Danny Ainge is going to ask for at least 20 of them. He's going to ask for at least 20 of them. Okay, so let's be serious for a minute. I think the Oklahoma City Thunder, in addition to their first round picks, I think over the next 6 years, I think they got 15 ones over the, in addition to their first round picks. I think they got 15 ones. Of them 15 ones, Danny Ainge is probably going to ask for at least five of them.
Without question.
At least five minimum. Of those ones.
Yeah, minimum.
In addition to the picks that he already got. So with that being said, not only do I want four or five of those ones that you got, let me get a couple of them kids too. I'll take Josh Giddey off your hands. This kid, Cason Wallace, I'll take him off your hands.
Listen, again, I'm going to be honest. If they want Josh Giddey and Cason Wallace with five first-round picks, done.
Oh, absolutely. It's done.
Done. 100%. And I love, and I want you to know, I love Josh Giddey's game, his game. I don't want nobody to misconstrue that, his game as a basketball player. I do think what he does as a basketball player is good, and I think it'll fit for a lot of teams in the NBA. But I'm higher on Lauri Markkanen and what he can do for the ceiling of this basketball team than I am. And I love Cason Wallace, too. I think he'll be a good NBA. I think he's going to be a good pro. But Lauri Markkanen, like Cam Newton says, he's not a game manager. He's a game changer. So, you know, I'm rocking with – I think – I would say done. I signed a dotted line, so let's do it. I'd shake hands right then and there.
I think it's going to cost more than that, though. And I think that Danny Ainge is in the process of – because, again, I'm not giving you a good player in Lauri Markkanen. I'm giving you an all-star. I'm giving you a building block. Mm-hmm. I'm not just giving you a good player. I'm giving you a building block. And if I'm giving you a building block, I need something substantial back. He's going to ask for one of those. He's going to ask for one of them kids. Jalen Williams, who's still on his rook deal.
He's good.
I would not. I think that Danny Ainge would talk Oklahoma City into handing him over.
Oh, you no. You can't do that.
I know you don't like it, J-Rob. I do. I know you're not liking
that,
it. I know you don't.
That kid is good.
I think he's gonna be an all-star, to be honest with you.
Me too. He's good. Good.
I think he's gonna be an all-star. I do.
He,
I think
Jalen. As much as I love Chet, he might sneak around and be the better player just because of what he's gonna be able to do from a scoring output standpoint, perimeter. Like I really feel bad for Oklahoma City, Chilltown, because all. From at least from what I've seen so far in the last 2 years of Jalen Williams and the year I've had of Chet Holmgren, all three of them brothers, that core right there, you're gonna have to max them out.
I believe that from the sound of your voice and the look on your face, this is, in the words of Marlo Stansfield from The Wire, this is one of them good problems.
This is one of them good problems.
Yeah, that's what this is. This is one of those good problems. This is not a good problem. Oh my God, no! Yeah. This is one of them good problems.
It's a
this
good
is one
problem.
Of problems that. Okay, we can figure this out. This is not something that's that bad of a thing for Oklahoma City. We could figure this out with these three guys.
We got good problems. Listen, this Oklahoma City team is I am excited for the future of Oklahoma City. That basketball team is finna change the economy in Oklahoma City, turning into a tourist destination. God damn it, just because of what they got to turn that spot into. But
the thing, though, J-Rob, is you got to remember, man, that when you building a unit like this, J-Dub in the draft, Josh Giddey in the draft, Chet in the draft, you got SGA in a trade. Basically, you got him in the draft because you got him in year two.
Facts.
You basically got him in the draft because you got him in year two. It wasn't like you got him in year six or seven. You got so that's four guys, Chet, Cason Wallace in the draft. The problem is that when you have these guys, and you're building them up, teams are going to come.
Oh,
and they're
going
to come try to poach. Okay, you did a great job with this guy. You did a great job with that guy. You did a great job with this guy. How about you hand this guy over? How about you hand that guy over? When in reality, the reason why I drafted these guys is to build up my unit, not yours.
Yeah.
That's not why I got these guys here. Not to build up your unit, to build up my unit. So that's the downside to it. The good side is Josh Giddey, J-Dub, Chet Williams. Chet Holmgren. Cason Wallace, who I think is going to be a player. SGA. These guys actually turn into what you think they're going to turn into. You hold on to them for as long as you can. That's the plus side.
I agree. But you already know. If it was me too, already looking at these Oklahoma City players, I have one of my top dogs. Hey, go whisper to J-Dub after the game. You know, say something to him about the city. Something like that, you know. Next time you come out here, you're gonna take him to dinner. Start rubbing elbows with him, because that boy gonna be a problem. And you know, if he wants to ever decide to test the market, see if throw, somebody's going to throw that brother the bag. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma City going to have to match some money. Chill, do you want to get to these super chats? And then
super chats, right, run the show, J-Rob. Super
let's get chats, it. Run the show, brother. I love it. I love it. Let's get to it.
Yes, sir.
From Winter with the $5 super chat. Prayers to Dejan Milojevic and his family and the Golden State Warriors. And what, facts. Rest in peace to his family. I heard about the story. The game actually got postponed tonight, which I thought was the appropriate thing to do just for respect to the basketball team. Prayers up to his family.
Yeah.
What team do you think can sneak and make a trade that hasn't been in trade talks? Chill, you
a
go for it.
A team that I think can sneak in and make a trade that has not been talked about is, and I'm sure he's been on the phone with them, is Greg Popovich calling up Atlanta. How about you hand over the kid Trae Young? How about that? How about you hand him over? What do you want? What do you, because I'm looking for a distributor, right?
Yes.
I'm actually looking for a distributor. I know that Trae Young is a shooter. I know he's a scorer, but I'm looking for a distributor.
Mm-hmm.
And Pop is one of those guys who, you know, he's nudging and he's constantly on your case. And I think he can pry Trae Young away from Atlanta to San Antonio, because I think he is exactly.
I love that. I'm going to be honest. I love that more than anything, because I love that for Wembanyama. Mm-hmm. I love that for, I really damn near love it more for Trae Young than anybody else.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because Popovich, at the end of the day, Trae Young is going to be what he is as a defender. He can't help that he's 6 feet tall. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, I think with Greg Popovich, what he's done with talented small guards in the league, the Tony Parkers, the Manus, I would love that matchup. And I could just see now the pick and roll with Trae Young and Wembanyama, this small player lobbing the ball to the heavens to 7'11" Wembanyama. I am definitely a fan of that. I actually love that. I love that.
Because I don't think DeJounte Murray coming back, I don't think he's what they're looking for. We're looking for a distributor, right? Yeah. DeJounte Murray is more of a defending wing and who can play offense. I think that they need it. I think we could find that. I think we could find another defender on the wing. Maybe not as good as DeJounte Murray to start, but maybe develop him into that. But if we could get a distributor like Trae Young, and I think we can tame his scoring, not slow it down, but tame it, so to speak. So in other words, J-Rob, instead of hanging out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, mm-hmm. I get you to hang out Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Instead of you going out A night.
Can I give you another player? Because you said, where else do we get NBA players from? The draft. You know who will be a perfect fit to add as a backcourt mate? I think he, if you're going to find some player. late value, player. Same school as Isaiah Collier. Go get Bronny James. He's not an aggressive. Listen. I don't know. If you don't got it, I know that face. You don't like it. You're going to probably get him late in that first round anyway. I think he will be a great NBA defender. I think he'll be a fine jump shooter. And he's not an aggressive basketball player. So I just think if you're looking for a guard who's going to be a defender, or you go get the kid Reed Shepherd from Kentucky. Because I think you're looking for a guard who's going to be willing to defend on the perimeter, not be too much of a make the offense around me type of guy, but is going to be able to shoot the ball effectively, get steals, rebound, and defend the perimeter at a high level. Because you're going to have to find a guard that is going to be able to guard the Steph Currys, the Luka Doncic's, the SGAs, all these league guards you're telling me about, Unc. You have to find somebody who's going to be able to guard them, and they're not all going to be somebody who is 6'8" wings, because there's also good wings on a lot of these other NBA teams. So to look for that guard who could do both and is not going to command so much attention of the offense, that's why I always I'm looking at Bronny James and Reed Shepherd, because those two players, they do a lot of the same things for their basketball teams. I just think the name Bronny James is like, J-Rob, you ODing, but I'm just talking about what they do as players. Reed Shepherd is another guy who's probably going to go in that lottery. Those two players would fit, I think, seamlessly because of their ability to guard on the perimeter. I think they'll be able to shoot the basketball, steals, hustle plays, things like that. Like, I think they make the right basketball plays, and I think that's some of the things that are needed in San Antonio, because one of my issues with San Antonio right now is that it just seems like nobody's it's like nobody's telling the other guys on the court that Victor is the guy. As of late, it's looked like that. But I'm like, you know, to start the year, I just kind of felt like everybody was trying to feel out what was going on with Vassell and Keldon and Wemby. The 7'3" center that is being compared to a generational talent like LeBron James, that's the team. And we're going to build around that. And so I think you need to find players who will fit seamlessly into that. And look, you told me about my fogging my glasses and seeing the vision. Yeah. You got to get behind the vision with me on this one, Unc. If you're giving me Zach Edey, I got to raise you Reed Shepherd and Bronny James. Okay. Both of them standing on top of each other is about the same size as Zach Edey. So it works out. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. All right. Wipe my glasses up. I'm seeing a little bit clearer. The thing that I'm concerned with, J-Rob, is I'm concerned with rushing this kid, James. That's what I'm concerned with more than anything. It's already the health issue already scares the life out of me. I don't like that for 1 minute. That whenever I hear about a basketball player and heart issues, that scares me. I do not like that. That's number one. Number two, the fact that who his father is, there's now this acceleration process where we got to hurry this kid up and get him to where we need to get him, where we're trying to get him to, so he can be there, not realizing that rushing him, we could screw him up. We could straight screw him up. And I don't think he's ready. Him being in San Antonio, right? Him being in San Antonio, which, by the way, if he was in San Antonio, his father would come down. I'm sure of that. His father would come down. Because don't forget, his contract is up after the season.
Yeah.
He's got a player option after the season. So with that being said.
You really think he'll leave L.A.?
Yes, 100%. I'll tell you what, I can't see him putting on a Detroit Pistons uniform,
obviously,
or a Portland Trailblazer uniform or a Charlotte uniform. I can't see him doing that. However, what I can say is if he's put in a situation where I know that he can grow and I know that his son can grow and get better, like San Antonio, where Pop will take care of him, I can see James coming down to San Antonio for a year.
He should come to the Knicks.
No way. No.
That would be the best side mission of his career. If he goes to the Knicks for two seasons and they win one championship, it'd be his greatest side quest.
That's the problem right there, J-Rob. Coming to the Knicks. What are we not coming to the Knicks so the kid can get better and get acclimated to the NBA life? No, we got LeBron James, so we're trying to win the NBA championship.
Listen, the kid could dream. The kid could dream. He was supposed to been come to New York, man. He was supposed to been come to New York. He never showed up.
I know that part. They basically rolled out the red carpet for him. He was like, nah, I think I'm good.
That was one of the worst days of my childhood when he picked to go to Miami. It was hard. That was one of the worst days of my childhood. Teddy Hart with the $20 super chat. Shout out to you, Teddy. Hopeful my OKC can get Drummond, Capella, Isaiah Stewart type player by the deadline. Also, do you think the Clippers change their name to the Inglewood Clippers next season? I actually think that would be phenomenal marketing. What about you?
Inglewood Clippers. They've always been the LA Clippers. Mm-hmm. But I do think that them moving to a new arena gives them a different identity. I think that's so dope for them, 100%. Yeah. I think that's so dope that now we don't have to share this arena with the Lakers and be the redheaded stepchild, so people can now pay attention to us. But the idea of those guys, like you just mentioned, you just talked about Drummond and Isaiah Stewart or Capella. I actually love Capella. In Oklahoma City. Yes, I do. I love Capella in Oklahoma City on that front line. Yeah. I Drummond too. I think Drummond would give you great minutes. But if I'm I already said that the Boston Celtics call up Chicago and ask for Andre Drummond and give them what they want. Because they ain't gonna ask for much. The Bulls are not gonna ask for much for Andre Drummond. He's on an expiring contract. You could probably give up a two for him. Call him up and ask for him. And I think that you could get him. 100%.
I agree. Alfred Bernardo. Hey, guys. Hope the year has been good so far. Appreciate that. Do you guys think the Ravens will win it all this year? That's my pick for the Super Bowl.
You know me, J-Rob. I bleed 49 red, and I don't think that the – be clear about one thing. Everybody saw when they came to the Bay what they did to us. Do not let that 33-19 score fool you. It was way worse than that. Just so y'all know, that 33-19, it was way worse than that.
It was.
We was just trying to make it respectable at the end. They could have scored 40 on us. They could have had us 40 to. It could have been like 40 to 10. So
they stole Christmas that night.
Yeah. Do not let that score fool you. It was way worse than that. But awesome. I'd like another shot at Baltimore. I don't think that they four touchdowns better than us. I don't think that their pass rush should have dominated us the way that they did. I don't think our pass rush gets dominated again like we did. Bosa was a non-factor. I never thought that I'd see Bosa as a non-factor and Fred Warner kind of befuddled. He couldn't. It's, not only could he,
it's
not
Lamar,
only
could not. Man.
Yeah, it is. It,
he's
it,
a different beast.
He is. J. Rob, I won't argue that. You will not get me to argue that. I'm looking at Fred Warner trying to figure out. he's trying to be a spy, but then on the flip side,
it's impossible to spy him.
No, you can't. Mm-mm.
It's impossible. You can try, but it's impossible.
Good luck. That's what you said. That's what you say with him. Good luck. I mean, and. Yeah. Not only that, we don't talk about Lamar Jackson as a thrower more than we talk about him as a running quarterback, which still boils my blood that people criticize him for being a running quarterback. When you praise Josh Allen for being a runner, right? You praise him for being a runner, right? I remember Steve Young. I was around J-Rob when they talked about Steve Young, him being a running quarterback, how awesome he was.
Yeah.
Even though Michael Vick tailored his game around what Steve Young was. That was his guy. But nah, Michael Vick ain't a quarterback. He's a running back, even though he's doing the same thing that Steve Young was doing.
This season, Lamar looked like Vick and Steve Young on steroids because his arm is 100% caught up to his legs, if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like I think now this is the best as a passion. I always thought he was fairly decent. Look, chill. Don't let these casuals lie to you. You don't lead the NFL in passing touchdowns and win an MVP. Not being able to throw the football. It just doesn't happen. You don't lead that. So, we'll see what happens, but let's get through the rest of these because I know we got some other stuff we want to get to. So, I want to make sure we get, and I know there's a show at 7. So, OKC should, Teddy Hardigan, OKC should trust Ainge as far as they can throw him. Plus, teams will tax OKC because they have an embarrassment of draft riches. Very true.
Absolutely. That's
very true. Very true. J-Dub is what people thought Pat Williams was going to be. Terry with two dads. Shout out Terry with two dads. Terry with two dads again. It's good seeing you back on PC. But chill, do you remember when you said that Rui was the modern day Alex?
Woo, 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 troll alert. Woo, 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 woo. Troll alert. Woo, woo. That Terry with two dads, he is that, yo.
He's trolling you. He's trolling you. The modern day Alex English.
Yeah,
so do you want me to send the link now or you want to talk about last night's action first?
Let's talk a little bit about last night's action and then we'll do both of them.
Because we only got about 45 minutes. That's why. Because Gridiron is on at 7. Shout out to them boys over there, Gridiron.
And we only got like about a half an hour, about another 15 minutes or a half an hour. So send the link out and we'll talk about last night's action in addition to sending the link out.
Perfect.
I want to start the conversation, J-Rob, with what you were gonna ask something.
Oh, so I wanted to ask you about there's a moment where your cousin was on national TV in 4K, and he says something high definition 4K. He says something that I wasn't ready to hear, but I also felt it in my soul because I'm high on this player. Hold on, you know he about to go get leave. You know what he's about to go get. Leaf, I thought did you watch Press Box earlier?
I did a little bit. I was leaving the dang.
Oh, okay. He had to go get that for. Oh, he had
he
to
went,
go get
he
that
went and got that dingy ass damn hat.
Yeah, I see what's going on. I see what's going on. He's not here to play no games
Listen
with you,
me.
Leaf.
Bent the brim. He mean business. He bent the brim.
I'm not playing with you.
I don't give a damn what he doing, J-Rob.
Yo, chill. I ain't gonna lie, chill. You look like a hell of a defensive coordinator right now,
Mississippi 22.
You ever see Friday Night Lights? You look like one of them coaches that was on that Houston team that beat him at the end of the movie.
Oh, ready. Yeah.
He got them boys ready. Yeah, he got them boys revved up. Yeah, he got them boys revved up for the game.
So we clear. I'm sorry, J-Rob. You were saying something before. Because
here we go. And I'm glad Context is here to talk about this, too, because let's talk about it. Your cousin said on national TV on High Definition that right now, from what he's seen this year, if he had to pick a player, he's taking SGA over Luka Doncic.
He did say that. Yes, he did.
On the current NBA rankings for MVP, SGA is currently third, and the top two are Joel and Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. What do you think of those comments by your cousin, and does he have a point?
I do understand where he's coming from. SGA is the shiny new toy. SGA is looking like SGA is looking, which does make sense. Let's not forget.
Hold up. Quiet. Pay attention.
So again, SGA is the shiny new toy. He's becoming a great player. But with that being said, we kind of take what Luka has been doing for granted. So because we take what Luka has been doing for granted, when you see something new, immediately you want to gravitate toward that. I, on the other hand, I'm not taking SGA over Luka. I'm not doing that at all. And the reason why I'm not doing that is because Luka is better.
Thank you.
Luka is a better player than SGA, and he's better than SGA in a lot of different ways. He ain't better than SGA just as a bucket getter. He's better than SGA in a lot of other different ways. Because he's better than SGA in a lot of other different ways, I think that I can do more with Luka than I can with SGA. So I can appreciate my cousin, his logic, but I have to respectfully disagree with that. Yeah.
Okay.
I respectfully disagree too.
Go
but
ahead.
At the same time, shiny new toy. I'm like, damn, that's a little bit wild. I mean, I told this man before the year that SGA was better than Donovan Mitchell.
Which he
and
is.
I stand on that.
Yeah, I agree.
And I said, and if had it not been for ESPN listing him at point guard, he would easily be the best two guard in the league. So this ain't even be a question, but right now I still probably got Devin Booker by like a little bit, but SGA, he has made himself a legitimate candidate, man, for MVP this year. For that team going from what they finished 10th last year to now number two, in the West, I'm like, yo, this. Hey, J-Rob, I got to piggyback on what J-Rob said, man. Like, this OKC team, they got so much promise ahead of them, man. Like, last year,
so, quick question. Rewind the clock. You just said what Shea has done this year. How are you talking about Shea in the 22-23 season? How are you talking about him?
We were talking about him. I thought he was most improved player of the year.
Before the season started, you were talking about him. You thought he was the most improved player. Is that correct?
I thought he could be a candidate. I didn't think he was going to be averaging 31.
You didn't think he was going to win it. You just thought he was a candidate.
Yeah. I didn't think he was going to be averaging 31.
Okay, right.
Somebody else did.
So in the 21-22 season, how were you talking about SGA?
21-22 season, I thought he was good. I mean, I thought he was the strides that he was making in that season. I thought coming into the 2022-23 season that he was going to be a certified all-star in MIP.
So moving forward, you thought he was going to be that?
Yeah. The 2023, at the end of 2023 season, right. I thought he was going to be that. At the end of this season, for him to be in the MVP conversation this quickly?
Right. Now, in the 2021 season, how were you talking about SGA?
2020-21 season, I thought he was a pretty damn good player.
In 2021, so the year after the bubble, how were you talking
just
about
asked
him?
Me the same
he was pretty damn good in 20. He was pretty damn good from 2020 to 2024. I will say this, SGA has been a damn good player. I mean, He's in his steady improvement. I mean, in every aspect, and every aspect from his field goal percentage, free throw shooting, all of those things improved. I think his worst 3-point shooting year was 2022. He shot at about 30%. Right now, he's shooting at about 32%, 37. Mm-hmm. Not 33. Not too great. But let me ask you this though.
Hold on, J-Rob. I want to stick with the theme here. With all of that being said, you just told me that steadily improving, is that correct? Steadily 100%. Improving to this season, we're now having an MVP conversation about him. What was the conversation about Luka in 2021 after the bubble?
Is he one of the best players in the world?
How about in 21-22? How about in 21-22? How about in 22-23?
Hold up. Before we continue, the only thing I had a problem with was shiny new toy. Like
once again, you're missing the point. In 2022-23, what was the logic on Luka?
Luka was about to be a top five player.
Right. So now to talk about SGA and talk about Luka, now you are entering this conversation, hence the shiny new toy. You haven't always been in this conversation. This conversation was not about you. You were improving, but you were not improving like Luka was improving, which means that you not improving like him, we should not be talking about you like him. Hence him being the shiny new toy.
And
that's
also
what he is.
And also they were drafted. Right, Leaf. And another thing, Leaf, hold on. Yes, he is. Yes.
Leafy.
And also to his point too, that you got to also, you know, I got to give credit to Unk here. They're the same draft class.
They were.
You know, and obviously SGA started off drafted by the Clippers. Obviously, we understand why his points the way it was. He averaged 10 points to start his career. Now he's a 31 point a game scorer. But listen, that man Luka came out the gate giving us 21. He was getting 21. He was getting 21. 6 and 7 out the gate. So I mean, if somebody says
Luka was crazy,
but I think SGA is a shiny new toy because now after the back to back seasons, you know, he was first team all NBA last year, and then obviously averaging another 30 ball on great splits again. Now I could say it's trajecting where maybe they can compete, but as right now, I think most people would say Luka is still the best player, and I think right now you probably would have to lean towards Luka. He's been doing this. And he has playoff experience. We haven't even seen SGA in a playoffs yet, series yet.
Yeah, in the case of between him and Luka, I understand that, but I don't know if I could call somebody a shiny new toy that just made first team All NBA.
Him making first team All NBA last year. How about the year before that?
The year before that, no. I don't.
How about the year before that?
I don't think he made a team.
And guess what? Luka was on the team four straight years.
Yeah,
you
know that.
You just got into this conversation, brother.
Right.
You are new. You are not seasoned in this. We was not talking about Latrell Sprewell when he made first team All NBA in 93-94, like we was talking about Jordan, right? Like we was talking about Joe Dumars. Like we was talking about the better two guards in the game. No, we weren't. You just showed up, brother. I ain't saying that you ain't nice. But you just showed up to this class.
But Unk, can I ask you
might have been in the school. You might have been in the school, but you just showed up to this class.
Maybe it's just a choice of words.
Can I ask you a question, though?
That's all.
Can I ask you one question? There's one thing I do want to ask you, Unk. So from Oklahoma, from 2019 to now, he was 19, 23, 24, 31, 31. Obviously, all of Oklahoma City. Do you think if he was wearing a different jersey that – because I think it took him having to average 31 a game a season ago for people to even really start talking about him. But he's been a 20 point scorer a game for really more the better half the majority of his
already
year. Majority of his year, you could already see he was going to be a player. But I think obviously him playing at OKC, do you think some of that plays into why and I think it could be the same thing with Anthony Edwards being in Minnesota, like. Because of where they're playing basketball, do you think that also affects how we, as you know, fans may potentially view them? Because what if they had like a Knicks jersey or a Clippers, Golden State, you know, one of those bigger names?
That's the point that I was making.
Miami Heat.
It depends on what jersey that he has on. Because just because he's in New York, if he was averaging 30 a game playing for Brooklyn, it wouldn't be the same as
right, right, Right. Facts.
If he was playing in, if he was averaging 30 a game, it would not hit the same playing in Orlando as it would if he was playing for the Miami Heat.
Facts.
So
facts.
The fact that he was wearing a different jersey, I'm not sure that it depends on what jersey he's wearing. That's number one. Number two, his game, in terms of him advancing, I still haven't. When we're talking about passing Luka, we're talking about guys that are now in the conversation because they've been doing something for a long time, both in the regular season and the postseason for a long time. We're talking about these guys doing the same thing that this guy is doing. So when you enter that conversation, these are the kind of credentials that you have to have. And the fact that he doesn't have that, that's why I'm using the logic, he's the shiny new toy. That's not because he's not a baller. That's not because he's not. I love SGA's game. Everything about SGA's game. But the fact that this dude
is there, I agree.
The fact that this dude has actually been to the playoffs one time, and that was his second year with Chris Paul, and he was averaging a modest 16 and I think 6. And he was helping his team out 100%. Mm-hmm. He was doing that. But to get in a conversation with Luka, to get in a conversation with Giannis and Joker, right? Tatum and KD and guys like that, you have to have those credentials. And he doesn't.
Right.
Everybody, be clear about one thing, J-Rob. Somebody's got to lead a bad team in scoring. Somebody's got to lead a bad team in rebound. Somebody's got to lead a bad team in the
facts.
Six.
No, facts.
Carnival
no,
stats. We call that. Carnival
no,
stats.
I agree. But I agree.
I think Luka did all of that at some point.
But hold on. But context, but I don't know how much time we got left with Unk, but we got to just talk about this, too. This is really important, Unk.
Of course.
The matchup between Jokic and Embiid. We can't – that can't not get talked about. So
I like
leave the floor to y'all, but that matchup was insane. What is your thoughts on that between those two bigs, or are you not putting too much stock in it because it has nothing to do with the playoffs, regular season game? Tell me your thoughts, and then, fellas, obviously, y'all go ahead.
I just don't like the idea of them not being matched up against each other the entire game. That's my
thing. Thank you. Thank you, Chill. Thank you, Chill. Stop trying to be super creative.
That's my biggest problem. I mean Shaq wasn't switched on to John Starks. Ewing was his matchup. LaJuan wasn't switched on to Sean Elliott. David Robinson was his matchup. I understand that the game is a lot different today than it was 25, 30 years ago. I can definitely get with that logic. But if we're going to talk about you like we talk about the best big men ever, these guys were matched up against each other. And if you're worried about stuff like, you're worried about stuff like fouling out, don't foul. And I know that's a lot easier said than done, but that's part of it. That's part of it. I said this earlier today. That's like me, Breezy, getting in front of you in a boxing ring and going, yo, if you punch me in the face, I'm surprised. Well, don't get punched in the face. Don't get punched in the face. That's how simple that is.
I get what you're saying, but I didn't necessarily have a problem. As long as they was matched up against each other at some point. The way that they went at each other, obviously, Joel, man, like that jump shot is getting very, very. It's looking more and more automatic.
I said automatic. It's looking automatic.
More automatic, bro. I would say
it might be.
On the other side with Joker, bro, in the last 10 games, we talking about somebody that's shooting 80-something%. So the thing, and he was outboarding him. He was getting at him on the rebounds.
Hold on, Lee. Let's add context to that. Let's add context to that. Because the thing about it is, I hate when people saying he was outboarding him. He wasn't outboarding Joel Embiid.
He was outboarding everybody else.
Here's what was happening. Chill. You understand this in particular when you are the primary rim protector. And with that team passing off, you have to worry about Aaron Gordon for that short roll or that lob threat. What tends to happen if you are a rim protector, and Leaf, you play 2K. When you're a rim protector, what happens when you jump? What happens? The other guy gets the offensive rebound because you're out of position. A lot of the times, Joel Embiid was on the other side of where the ball was bouncing to. I think Mars explained it very well. There was a lot of tough bounces, and on top of that, Chill made a great point. They weren't matched up on each other. So Tobias Harris can't do nothing with Jokic. That's a scheme thing. I don't think that was so much just the will of Joel Embiid and getting outboarded by him. I think that was more of a schematic thing and a more defensive, like, breakdown thing.
All 19 rebounds was schematic?
Well, can I just say this, though, about the rebounding thing? And I think, you know, obviously I know it was a topic of conversation, and this is why I don't want people to, like, I don't want to say it's overblown, but, like, in some cases, how many offensive rebounds does Jokic at times account for? You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, just in a game. He does get a lot of offensive rebounds. But when I look at...
I think he averages three offensive rebounds a game.
So yeah, that's a lot. So that means of that three, there's going to be those five offensive rebound games, those six, those seven, those going to be sprinkled in there as well. A lot of the time, Embiid is taking a lot of jump shots, bro. So he's never, like, those three extra rebounds, four extra rebounds that most centers get from offensive rebounding, things of that nature, Embiid's not necessarily getting those as often because, like we were talking about, like, Embiid is a jump shooter. Like, that's how I be looking at him some days. Like, bro, he's taking perimeter jump shots, and it is so automatic that I just think that limits him because he's not lower to the block. Like, I think he could easily have at average two to three more rebounds to his average if he played down into the block a little bit more. But because
is he a better jump shooter than Ewing?
Is Joel Embiid a better jump shooter than Ewing?
Is he a better mid-range shooter than Ewing? Is he a better shooter than Ewing, period?
I think he's a long ball shooter, 100%. But in the mid-range,
I think he's a better all-around shooter than Ewing.
I think he's a better long ball shooter than you. I don't think he's better all around.
He might be better, bro.
All around, he definitely shoot the long ball better than you. He definitely shoot the long ball better. He's definitely a better free throw shooter. So if we're doing that, if we're doing free throws, if we're doing the long ball, if we're doing in the mid post, I don't think that I'm not sure he's a better mid post and mid range shooter. I don't think he clears him, but in the long range,
who's the best?
I heard the conversation.
Who's the best shooting big? Who's the best shooting big of all time in your eyes, Unc? I'm asking, Unc.
My bad. Say that one more time, J-Rob. One more time, J-Rob.
Who do you think is the best shooting big? Yeah.
Yes, best shooting.
How far away is Embiid to Dirk at the pace that he's going from with his shooting ability?
Nowhere near Dirk.
I'm not saying he'll be the best shooting big ever. I'm saying how far away is he, like, on a list? So if he 2, 3, 4, 5, damn, Leaf. I understand Dirk is the better shooter. I'm trying to figure out where he thinks Embiid's trajectory is.
To answer your question, J-Rob, I think that Joel Embiid, he's going to be, when he retires, he's going to be up there with the greatest shooting big man of all time. I think he's going to pass Ewing. I think he's going to pass Ewing, but I think the difference between him and guys like Cat, between him and guys like Dirk, guys like that, I think the difference is that stop and pop in transition, that quick jump shot in the mid range and at the long ball line, also at the free throw line. I think that when he continues to get that down, I think that that's just going to put him in a different stratosphere, which is where he is now.
Yeah. And hey, what are your thoughts?
Is Dirk the best mid-range shooter of all time?
For a big?
Period.
No, he's not.
No.
No, he's not the best. No. But for a big?
Can you give me five people that's better than him all time?
Mid-range shooters.
Jordan, give me Jordan, give me Kobe, DeMar DeRozan. I will actually go Devin Booker. Damian Lillard, Steph Curry.
We're talking about mid-range guys. Mark Price. We could do this all night with mid-range.
Reggie Miller. We could do this all night.
Kyrie Irving.
I'm gonna be honest. I'm damn near willing to go. We're just talking mid-range jump shots, mid-range jump shooting. Give them both another 2-3 seasons. Man, Luka Doncic and SGA, bro.
I'm only putting KD over
as mid-range jump shooter.
Chris Paul, as a mid-range shooter. Explain that. Explain your criteria for a mid-range shooter.
I mean, Dirk, is it correct or not? Did he not get most of his money in the mid-range?
No, he didn't.
Where was most of his money at?
Most of his money was on the block. Why you think that leg up shot? That one leg
fadeaway jump shot.
That was his money. That was his money move. That was his game. Not only was that his game. Not only was that his game. He stretched the D. He stretched the defense when he was able to knock down the long ball and transition the way he did. Stretched the defense when they sped the game up. I'm trying to understand your criteria for a mid-range shooter. What do you classify as a mid-range shooter? Do you care about when they do it? Do you care about how they do it? Do you care about where they do it?
Elbow to elbow in those outside of the paint in those areas. And
that's where.
If I'm not mistaken, in those areas between 2000 and 2009, he shot the best percentage from all of those areas than anybody in the league.
From 2000 to 2009, is that a fact? I'll have to go look that up.
That can't be a fact. I don't know.
I think there's a few guys that I would take over him.
Can't be?
No way.
From 2000 to 2009.
Kobe, DeMar,
Kobe Bryant, because DeMar DeRozan didn't show up till 2008. Right, DeMar
Kobe, and LeBron. I mean, in LeBron, DeMar Kobe, and Jordan. I'm taking them easily over Dirk. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, mid range.
Those are mid range demons, bro.
I don't think that Dirk Nowitzki is the best mid range shooter ever.
And I'm taking Kyrie Irving, bro. I'm taking Kyrie Irving in that mid range game.
He was not a better mid range shooter than Jordan. He was not a better mid range shooter than KD.
KD.
He was not better.
I give you KD and Jordan. He did not play.
Kobe Bryant.
He did not play in the mid range better than Kobe Bryant. No. So he did not play in the mid range to them dudes. Right. So
he was taking tough shots.
But yo, Kobe,
this is nasty. I have a question,
fellas, real quick.
This is for real nasty.
Yeah, it is nasty. It's nasty, Leaf. It's nasty. It's nasty.
I think he's top five though. I think he definitely top five. I think guys could catch up though. I think they could catch up though.
I don't think it is at all.
I do have a question though. I have a question for Chill and then J Rob and then to the rest of the panel. I don't know if you guys got a chance with Sacramento to watch a Sacramento game, and they gave up that lead, that terrible lead. It was like a hooker on
Fifth Ave. That's what they were trying to do.
It is nasty work. And I hit up Ox and I was telling him, I said, listen, I understand we got it. Mike Brown is trying to do the film. Jackson thing and all that stuff. You need to correct some things and nip it in the bud. I'm watching De'Aaron Fox sit in the corner while Malik Monk and Deontay Sabonis are going tit for tat. So who can take the stupidest shots? I don't know what's happening. Like, and then the defense. Let me chill. Go ahead, chill. Like, so what's as a coach?
Grayson Allen, man.
What are you saying? Yeah.
So. They're up 22 with 8 minutes. So that means almost half the quarter is over.
Right.
So that means almost half the quarter is over. And in order to win the game, in order to get back in the game, to cover, they got to go on at minimum a 22-0 run in order to just get back in it. Instead, not only do they cover, they win. I can't discount the defense that KD played. And I won't discount the defense that KD played, because KD played some damn good defense. That has also a lot to do with your lead guard getting control of the offense, settling us down, getting us back in the sets that we need to get into. I've already said this to Lee. Excuse me. I've said this to Lee more than once, more than twice. I can only X and O you for a certain amount of time. When we get into games like this, where the Sacramento Kings have now given up a 10-0 run, they've given up a 12-0 run, and it's 5 minutes left in the game, and that 22 has now gone down to 11, or it's gone down to 8. My lead guard, give me the ball. You here, you there, you over there, you on the block. That's what we need, and we didn't get that. Right. Instead, what we got is we had a bunch of helter-skelter offense. We had a bunch of guys standing around watching. This is where leadership comes in. This is your leader on the floor asking, yo, you, can you get over there? You. Get over here. You get on the backboard. Let's not make it sound like Phoenix scored every trip, because they didn't score every trip. They did miss some shots, but they also did rebound too. You didn't rebound. Yep. And just because I got the best rebounder in the league, arguably, on my team, does not negate me from rebounding. That's like me having the best scorer in the league on my team, so I don't need to score because this dude is on the team. No, that's not the way that works. No.
I like it.
That's a fact.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not as sold on the Kings, honestly. I think the run from last year was great, but depending on who they match up with in the first round of the playoffs, I think they're a first round exit again, unfortunately. No hate to the Kings. Because I just look at
so they're not winning the playoff series this year.
I mean, just, like I said, it depends on who they play. Because I'm gonna be honest, fellas. When I'm really looking at this thing, I'm being really honest. When I look at the Denver Nuggets, the Timberwolves, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, the Suns, and Dallas, those teams alone, if Sacramento, I feel like, has to play any of those teams in the first round, ultimate bust.
They lose.
Don't let Lake Glorious get a 11th hour trade deadline magical miracle like last year. It's quiet for the Kings. Like, let's be real. Like, we're not – at the end of the day, y'all taking LeBron in the first round of a playoff series regardless, especially if it's not against somebody tough. You can say what you want, Leaf. You can say what you want, bro. They swept up the Warriors. It is what it is. They beat the Grizzlies, who was the number two seed last year. I'm just saying, bro. I'm just saying. Listen, I'm not trying to fight with you about that. I'm just saying. I'm just not confident in the Kings beating any of those teams I just said in a first round series. That's just how I think about them right now. I'm just not too sold. I think what they got going on. Go ahead.
I think they should have went. Honestly, I think they need to put more Alex Lynn minutes. I don't know if he's recovering from an injury, but they need to be bigger. I think this lineup, Deontay Sabonis, you are not a five. I'm sorry, Ox. Y'all keep trying to make me believe that he's a five. He is not a five. Bam Adebayo is not a five. These guys are fours, and they are struggling when they go against big men. Let's get away from that. On top of that, too, they need perimeter defense. Too many times, the rotations are bad, and then they get exploited. Another thing, I thought they should have went after Pascal Siakam. I'm happy that Indiana got him. I disagree with you, Chill. I think the person that might be able to make Pascal Siakam stay in Indiana might be Haliburton. I think making his job easier as a scorer, and I think if you get some more pieces, I think the Bruce Brown experiment was a complete failure. Bruce Brown was getting fried left and right. I think Naismith is a better defender than him. I think Nembhard is a better defender than him. And I think you will see that later on. But we'll see how this turns out. But back to the original point, Sacramento, you need to get a big man. You need to get a Andre Drummond, get something so that way you can get the rebounds, like Chill said, so that way you're not giving multiple possessions and having Grayson Allen go crazy on you guys. It is ridiculous. Grayson Allen can hit open shots. Don't give this man open jump shots. Come on, like
I would go as far as saying that like they could use like a Miles Turner type of player, like somebody that could block shots and stretch the floor.
No, that's what Sabonis does. Except he rebounds. That's the he do the same thing that Turner does. Except he rebounds. My man down here, you were about to say something. The context, but you were about to say something.
Shout out to this panel. I was just listening to the conversation. Shout out to I just want to catch up a little bit. I think the Clippers missed on Shea, and trajectory wise. OKC is right where the Clippers, like, they trajectory-wise, Shea brung OKC up to where the Clippers is at. They playoff bound, almost contenders, and the Clippers just missed on that. And the Shea Luka thing, I gotta give a lot of props to Luka. You know what I mean? He came in and he hit the NBA with, you know what I'm saying, big time. But Shea, the way Shea playing right now, you can't sleep on him. And I honestly, off this conversation, I want to see them play each other in that first round.
I will say this, Breezy. To your point, I can't say that they missed on Shea because you got to remember how they got Shea. Now, we're talking about Kawhi Leonard coming off being the finals MVP, and we're talking about Paul George, who was, I think, he was first team All NBA the year before, team All Defense, and Shea was a rookie. Getting traded, becoming a second-year player. If you don't make that deal, you're fired on the spot.
If you don't make that deal, you're fired on the spot.
Nobody knew that Shea was going to be this good, but Doc Rivers did see, and Doc saw it too. Doc saw that Doc hated giving him up, but he had to at that particular time. He saw what it was. He had to make the deal. He had to. 100%.
Trajectory-wise?
Keep going, Breezy, real quick.
Not to be long-winded, because I know y'all going to close out soon. I honestly tried to avoid it, Chill, as much as possible, but I did become the villain. You know how cold it is up in Brooklyn and New York, and they was asking me to wear a sugar coat made out of sugar. Can't do it. You know what I'm saying? It's too cold. too cold to wear a coat of sugar. So case in point is the front office in the Brooklyn Nets, they got to do better. I took some flack off of that. I'm defending Cam Thomas more than I'm defending Jock Vaughn, so they mad about that. I'm a fan of the team first, but from what I've seen, I only seen Cam Thomas showing up night after night. So I'm a villain right now. I try my best not to be the villain because I like chilling. But right now I'm the villain, Chip.
It's hard out here, fam. Me, bro. It's hard out here being the villain, B. It's hard out here.
Coaching is integral. Coaching is integral, and I feel like Jack Vaughn is doing it. It's tough. And Jack Vaughn, I'm gonna grab you by your beard if you keep messing up these lineups. Mikal Bridges,
we got three more super chats we gotta get through before we
die. Before I go.
Hold on. Time is money.
No. We'll do the super chats before we go. Before I go,
I just want to say, J-Rob, listen, you going to be on the football thing this weekend? Y'all talked about
the Cowboys. I picked the Packers.
Yeah, I know you picked the Packers, but like that was a good pick. You're a smart man for that, and I trust your football judgment.
I picked them again this weekend.
Yeah, and obviously, but there's a reason why, because the play calling is actually better. Matt LaFleur is actually getting out his own way and actually toting the damn pill like he's supposed to.
Facts,
ass football, bro, and that's the reason why we're gonna stomp a mud hole and this gentleman right here win that dusty ass guy in 49ers.
All I gotta say is,
and by this time next week, it's gonna be white.
I'm gonna say about this, J-Rob, we ain't the Cowboys.
That's
yeah.
Y'all don't have to be the Cowboys.
Okay, I like it. We ain't the Cowboys.
I know what you're thinking, and I know who you're looking for. We ain't them. That's all I'm gonna say about
that. Said it. I agree with that. They definitely ain't the Cowboys.
We ain't them, yo. So,
Teddy, fellas, we appreciate that.
Absolutely, fellas.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely, fellas. Good to see y'all, dude.
Welcome back.
Salute.
All right, so let's get these last super chats out of the way. Teddy Hart, speaking of Spurs needing a pass first point guard, do you think they'd be interested in Giddy for Vassell? Giddy is playing out of position at OKC due to Shea. But see, this is the thing. Giddy might be too traditional for today's game with lead guards.
I think he would flourish under Pop, and he would be the way he distributes. He would be straight with at 6'5", 6'6". He might be bigger than that. I think he might be like 6'7", 6'8".
Yeah, he's like 6'8". He's tall.
He would be great with Wimby. How he distributes. 100%. No, 100%. Yeah, he would be great with Wimby. 100%. He would.
That'd be a good trade. On a scale of 1 to 10, on a scale of 1 to Dirk, Embiid as a shooter is an 8.
He can shoot the basketball.
Yeah, he can shoot it. Yes, 100%.
He shoots it with the best of
them. Teddy Hart, one more. LaMarcus Aldridge, McAdoo, and KG is the best big mid-range shooters, in my opinion.
No, I don't
think you got to add. Yeah, you got to add Dirk. Dirk better than all of them. You
have to add Dirk to that. As good as David Robinson was as a mid-range shooter, as good as Ewing was as a mid-range shooter, them dudes ain't better. No, they weren't.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, anything before we let the people go?
We back in effect, yo. Every Wednesday. Yes, I got my nephew with me. Every Wednesday, he'll show up every week, but sometimes he'll be here.
Yeah. I'll make sure. Yeah.
Yep. I got my nephew with me. So as I said before, yo, drink water, put on a suit. Don't drink and drive. Hey man, call your mother, yo.
Call your mother, yo.
Call your mother. She's waiting for you to call. So. Yeah.